Okie doke, you're welcome back to the 9 till noon show. And it's been a while. We have Brendan Devaney, presenter of Highland Radio's DL Debate, in studio with us. Brendan, good morning to you.
Good
Thanks
morning
so much
to you,
for
Greg.
Calling up. How are you getting on?
I'm good, keeping the best,
and
fresh.
Fresh, and you're up there getting your show ready as well too. So good to call you in. Right, okay, so that walkover against Clare is not going to do us any favours, is it? Or is that the kind of victory you need after a disappointment against Cork?
Do you know what, Greg? See how the lads applied themselves. You couldn't ask for any more. And listen, chatted loads of people. See, even in the second half, I still found it entertaining because the lads kept playing the ball. You know, we very easily found a few bad habits. Maybe Clare get a goal and a few points or something and you'd be disappointed. That didn't happen. Donegal kept, you know, the subs had all come in, kept the pace up, the quality was up, there's still some brilliant scores. So what can they do? I think with Clare, when you look into it now, Greg, obviously they lost about 10 players from last year. Now, the two big games that they had was Kerry and Ennis when, you know, first Cusick Park Monster Final, 100 years or whatever, and there was a whole crowd there for that, and they elevated their game. And then, of course, they have a brilliant record recently against Cork. So then, because we had lost to Cork, we were like, right, we better watch. This could be dangerous, you know, whatever. You know, let's say if Clare had beaten us, which seems crazy now, you know, they would have been through, we would have been out. So as it was then, taking all in, we absolutely destroyed them. Yeah. And, you know, we ended up, I was looking there, if you look at the scoring charts, of course, Kerry and Dublin are lording it in terms of their groups, you know, 39 and 31. We actually ended up on 29 plus. Now, that's it, us with even losing the game. So it just shows you how much we dominated that. And, of course, we had a great victory against Tyrone as well.
And also, too, this, the psychological side of this, you know, where you talk about, you know, what a defeat means and what a convincing win means. I think that's where the Jim Guinness factor comes into it, because I think, firstly, he's not going to let the team run away with themselves with victory, and he's certainly not going to allow themselves to get into the doldrums with defeat.
Yes.
So that's the manager's factor there. So that wouldn't worry me too much.
Yeah, if you look at it now, if there was a time for us to be defeated, that the Cork game was actually the game, because we still ended up top of the group, and because of our friends in Tyrone doing us a big favour, beating Cork, we now have that period where we can relax. We obviously are not going to play, you know, Kerry or Dublin or other. We can avoid all that. So the pathway has worked brilliantly. And you're on about Jim. Things click into place for Jim. He has the magic and things just, you know, a lot of stuff there. You're looking at what could have happened at the weekend. Cork were in charge of the group going into the end. Now they end up the third team and they have to go away from home to play Louth in that prelim quarter final. So listen, it's fantastic for us, Greg, and you know, we were on a brilliant run. Sometimes you need a bit of a reset, as you said, and the fact that you can get that and it still didn't damage you in the group, you know, was brilliant for this Donegal team, and we can recuperate in many ways. That game at the weekend wouldn't have taken much out of them, Greg, in terms of that. So we can build up nicely in the quarter final.
The quarterfinal prelims are Mayo versus Derry, Louth versus Cork, Tyrone versus Roscommon, Galway versus Monaghan. A lot of Ulster teams in there. We don't know. There's another then draw that takes place after these prelim games, presumably next Monday morning again. We don't know if we're playing Saturday or Sunday. We don't know who we're going to be playing, obviously. But it does set up a third game against Tyrone. That would be a bit of a pain in the old backside, wouldn't it?
Yeah, not the game we would like, and I would expect Tyrone to come through.
You know,
that game.
That's the game we're going to get.
Yeah, do you think?
Oh, you know, as sure as a gum card.
Waiting for us in the long grass. Listen, yeah, there's a kick in Tyrone, Greg, and you know, they're very up and down as a team. You don't know what. So it's a dangerous team for Donegal, and of course, you know, having beaten them twice, you know, it's always that thing of it's a game that we wouldn't want. But listen, it is what it is, Greg. Whatever comes out of the hat comes out of the hat. But there's certainly teams there you would think, particularly with Mayo, Tyrone and Galway's going to look like they'll come through that. You know, the Louth and Cork one's very hard to call, but I certainly can't see anything but those three sides coming through. And
there's a lot on Derry going into that game because there's been a lot of talk about them, and quite rightly so, in terms of, you know, where they were at, sort of where they've gone now. And a lot of the negativity would go out the window if they could beat Mayo. I mean, that's potentially a huge game for Derry, not just in terms of this season, but in terms of the last 3 or 4 years and going forward.
Yeah, listen, I just can't see it. You have seen it many times where the team puts too much energy into the league and they're operating at a level above everybody else, which is near championship level. That's why they were beating everybody so convincingly. And you lose that energy and you have a few injuries, bit of indiscipline, and everything unravels then. You know, 2-7, Greg, is not going to, you know, and the goal came late. That's not enough scoring that's going to beat teams. And if you look at McGuigan, talking about one of the best forwards in Ireland, you know, up into this. Listen, I think he missed his four shots from play. He got two frees. And that's kind of a sign of the team throughout. The confidence isn't there and the energy isn't there. And I was at the Armagh game. Like, Armagh completely destroyed him and could have won by far more. So I don't see how you can bring a team back from that. And certainly Mayo will be buzzing after that performance. They should have beat Dublin yesterday. And, you know, Dublin, they'll think 30 seconds up. Typical, Lexan Mayo should have shut that game down. I mean, how... The guy was nearly in for a goal, never mind a point.
It was just a wonderful move at the right time.
It was. But you sometimes, and that's the thing that'll always hurt Mayo. And I was even looking at them, Greg, you know, the point that Mannion got, you know, three Mayo players rushed him whenever he gets the ball, you know, in a critical moment. I'm thinking, right, why wasn't one of them picking up Mannion? And that's always the thing that can hurt Mayo. But that said, they played well. But Dublin out of Croke Park, Greg, that was the big thing, you know. It just changed the whole dynamic of it. And they suddenly looked
and
a bit more ordinary.
Also, too, they look very ordinary. I don't watch the Sunday game. I'm just curious. A lot of deep defensive football, a lot of crappy football, right, that we get absolutely hammered for up here. I wonder, did the pundits give Dublin any abuse yesterday for playing the exact same type of football, but worse?
Well, Kieran Whelan's on with me. I'll be asking him. Of course, he's a dub. Yeah, direct to him, Greg. Right. I won't let him shy away.
What about the system, though? I think if I'm right, Derry's lost 3 out of 4 games in the Championship, right?
Yes.
And to get into the prelim quarterfinals, they beat one Division 3 team.
Yeah,
if I'm not mistaken.
That's true.
That's not a fantastic system, is it?
But you know what? People talk about that, right? If you've got two teams that go through, right, that means that a team could be out after the first two games, which means if they're playing a team that wants to get into the second place, they've already given it up.
Yeah.
If you look at that, and I know it's not perfect, but if you look at that yesterday, Clare still had a chance if they'd have beaten Donegal to go through, which still means that they have something to play for. Now, I know they didn't play. Now, otherwise, like, you're going to have teams that down tools and it'll obscure the group. So I think even though it's not perfect, I do think it's a better thing that everybody's alive coming the last game. Now, the thing about a team like Derry scraping through the way they have, Greg, those teams aren't going anywhere. People might say, oh, you could scrape through and this happened. That's not going to happen. Yeah. You know, if you scrape through, the likelihood is...
Would you
that
give
next
me,
game you're
neither
out.
The two of us are gamblers, but would you give me 5-1 on Derry on a tenner?
Big time.
Yeah?
Aye. All Derry, right, Derry defeat Mayo.
Just for the crack.
For the crack, always, right.
I put a tenner down, you put 50 down.
That's fine.
And if I win, I'll donate it to charity. How's that?
That's fine, yeah. And if I win, I'll
you'll not get it.
Use it for myself. That's a great system you have there.
I don't know. We'll sort it up now. Right. Okay. But that being said, right, I there was lots of games at the weekend that were good, and the games meant something, like you said. I understand how people might sort of say the system's a wee bit flawed in a lot of games to remove a certain amount of teams. But, you know, Mayo, Dublin, Armagh, Galway, now some of them the second half was better than the first, don't get me wrong. Tyrone, Cork,
Roscommon, you know, Cavan, you know,
good games.
They were high scoring, you know.
That meant something. Yeah. There's something in the mix there.
Yeah, I think probably all Ireland, the issue is with it, is that particularly with Kerry and Dublin, that, as I say, that scoring average, and I know we scored highly, but that's maybe a lot has to do with that Clare one on Saturday. But there's that bit ahead, we're just wondering. That's why the levelling out of Castlebar, of Dr. Hyde Park, to Mayo was very interesting, because when it gets to Croke Park, Dublin and Kerry are so used to it and they really play it, and particularly Dublin have made it such a fortress that, you know, that changes and gives them that extra boost. Not only the best squads, they operate the best of the pitch. But listen, that's not going to change, but you certainly look, most of the other teams, Greg, look a bit more like we've got, there's weaknesses in there and there's stuff. But listen, Mayo certainly, I'll give the rest of the teams encouragement. I certainly think Donegal, you know, are in there in Armagh, you know, worthy of being top of their groups.
I presume the quarterfinals, once we get the prelims out of the way, they're going to be two double headers in Croke Park, is that it?
That's normally what they'll do, yeah.
The problem is now, like, say for instance you're a huge Donegal fan, especially if you went down to Cork and especially if you went down to Castlebar, I think firstly those fans should get first dibs on the tickets, personally speaking. Not first dibs, but some sort of advantage. But secondly, like, if you want to book a hotel room or something, you don't know if it's Saturday, you don't know if it's Sunday, the prices are through the roof anyway. And also, too, that means there's like 20,000 tickets per team.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It would be, wouldn't it?
be around.
I mean,
that
some
day,
counties won't. Yeah. Some counties won't take them all. Some counties want more. We'll
there'll probably be more free seal, you know, through
general sale stuff. Yeah. All right. Okay. Yeah, but that's the way it is anyway. It'll be an advantage for Dublin again.
Dublin, yeah. Bring a tent.
Can you imagine me?
Bring a tent.
Yeah, but can you imagine me? Like, it's not bad when the biggest concern is. Are we playing in Croke Park on Saturday or Sunday, deep into the Championship?
Listen,
it's not too bad.
Yeah, the cost, listen, like the away to Cork, I suppose, Castlebar, yeah, there's a lot in that, and it's a tough one. I'd just like to say, fair play to all Donegal fans coming down to Castlebar too, because like, that was pretty much the Donegal were going to win the game. So very easy for people to say not to bother, but there was a huge crowd there. If anybody was trying to get through Sligo, for example, it was absolute chaos. So, listen, fair play to you all. I'm sure they'll come in big numbers to the quarter.
All right, there's lots to get through this evening. Brendan will have top GEA sports writer Christy O'Connor. You heard Brendan mention Dublin legend Kieran Whelan will be on the show. John Gulday, former Donegal star as well. What else is on the show? Is it mostly just reflecting on these games, looking forward?
That was the soul of the weekend, yeah. It was all Donegal and all Ireland final group games. That's what we're concentrating on, and of course we'll talk about those fixtures that come up, and next week we're going to do a preview then of who Donegal are playing and build up to Croke Park Tyrone. you've named it now.
Oh, it's just, you know, it's yeah. just the story is Donegal facing Tyrone for the third time in the Championship.
Yeah
I hope it's not the case, but it often gets thrown up.
Yeah. There'll be a song about that.
Yeah.
Rory Gallagher's song, of course, is out kicking now.
What's the story with that? Jimmy Reboot. I've seen that on social media. What's going on with
Jimmy,
that?
Jimmy Stafford's got behind it well there. Yeah, he brought it up to 2024 and put some of the lads in from the current team and that.
Cool.
He performed it here live one day.
Yeah. One of those things that you keep seeing but you just haven't watched the video and stuff? Yeah. So what is it? Is it for... Is
Do you
it
want me to give you a few bars?
Yes.
You heard me down that day on the live broadcast singing a Country Master song.
You really got into character there.
Oh, yes.
You know what I mean?
The performance was all, the vocals was shocking.
It was just pure. No, it wasn't. It was fine. Pure guts. Fall into character.
No, listen, right. Fair play to Rory. Yeah, that song's been released, I think, today, actually, Greg. So
great.
It'll be up on Spotify, iTunes and all.
Well, is it here? Do we have it? We must give it a spin and support it as well.
Going to the hospice. So,
if I can get my hands on it, we'll give it a spin before the end of the show and let people know all the ins and outs of it.
That's great.
Brendan Devaney, thank you very much indeed. Now, that DL debate in association with Sister Sarah's is live this evening, just after the 7 o'clock news. You've got writer... GEA sports writer Christy O'Connor on the show. You've got Dublin legend Kieran Whelan in there. You've got former Donegal star John Gilday in there as well. So that's coming up just after 7 o'clock live on Highland Radio. But you can listen to it whenever you wish on demand after that. So they're going to be talking about all the weekend's action, what's coming up next weekend, and what could be for Donegal the weekend after. 086 60 25,000 if you have any comments in relation to that. 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. A caller says, in the EU petitions report on the defective blocks issue, the same company was found to be compliant by the National Building Control and Market Surveillance Office. When are you going to report these things, Greg, in the interest of balance? Most suppliers in Donegal are caught up in this. This is a bigger issue throughout the country. It's not just one company involved in this, says a listener there. I understand where that person might be coming from. I don't know if they have any skin in the game, but generally speaking, we talk broadly about the issue on this programme. A man gets mugged and seriously injured by a dog, yet it takes a call from a councillor to get the Gardaí to act. What the hell is this country coming through? That was a little bit of a weird one, I have to admit, what seemed to be the timeline of the Gardaí getting involved in that incident. I've an Airbnb on the route of the rally. I have kids at the creche to lift and leave. I've been onto the rally crew 2 weeks ago and we have been given assurances they'd be in touch, but there has been no agreement. I've been onto the council and they have listened. They have been listening to my concerns. In the past, I was given assurances that people watching the rally wouldn't be on my land and that the rally stewards would make sure it wouldn't happen. That didn't happen. We've horses and sheep who are spooked by the noise, says that listener there. Morning, I worked in Letterkenny and most days a family walk up and down Port Road with an Alsatian not on a lead and no muzzle. Well, that is fundamentally against the law. If a dog is in its own garden yard, is the owner responsible if someone comes in uninvited? The rules that we, the rules that I have referenced are out in public. I hope now I can speak to Rachel Morrow, CEO of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. Are you there, Rachel?
I'm here. How are you?
I am good, Rachel. I'm good. This is one of these stories that that need to be highlighted, Rachel, but I wonder if you agree. I'm conscious that maybe in outlining what needs to change, we hopefully don't discourage people from coming forward. Do you get where I'm coming from?
You're so right, because this story can be shocking to listeners and they may not even be aware of the legislation that is in place. There is a law that allows the prosecution and the defence in a sexual offence case to request to see the counselling notes of the alleged victim of that offence. Now, it's claimed that that's for the purpose of a fair trial and that the prosecution should disclose all relevant material within its possession unless there's a valid reason for not doing so. And in the case of alleged sexual offences, that includes counselling notes. But like you said, that can really send like a chilling message to victims of sexual violence who might be really concerned that what they say in the privacy of a counselling room can actually be used as evidence in a trial. So we've been raising this concern for many years, and that victims feel that counselling notes are used as part of a wider playbook to discredit them, and that they feel what they say to their counsellor, it should be in a sacred space between them and their therapist, but actually those notes have been weaponized against them.
But I don't even know how they could be used, because context surely is important. What someone says privately, maybe what someone says in the immediate aftermath of something, maybe they are, you know, there could be, as they work through it, they could be saying, could it be my fault? Was I responsible? Whatever it might be, the circumstances that you might feel free to say to someone in a private situation like that, to work through a huge trauma, that in some way then that could be used by a defendant against you. I can't see the logic in that at all. I never knew about this, Rachel. I think it's horrendous, honestly.
I totally share those sentiments, and actually we're fearful that this provision in Irish law is leading to some victims making a choice between seeking counselling with a therapist or seeking justice through the courts. And that's never a situation that we want to be in. The reporting rate is already really low, and we need to try and encourage people to report to the Gardaí and have a smooth pathway to justice. But at the moment, it's very difficult to see, unless there's a clear-cut case, that why counselling notes would be used as evidence. And the state did try to address it by passing a new law intending to strike a balance between the rights of an alleged victim and the accused person's right to a fair trial. So they established this new section of the Criminal Evidence Act, and it set out the grounds in which the court should grant access to records in a case where the victim does not consent to them being used. But I understand that that provision has seldom been used, and actually victims are for the most part consenting to the use of their counselling records because they're fearful of delaying further what is a really, really long path to criminal justice.
Yeah, but even if, and it depends on the crime, and also perhaps maybe the relationship between the victim and the perpetrator, and even if it doesn't go to trial, the fact that that abuser or perpetrator could then get access to the private conversations and feelings of the victim, as I say, even if it doesn't go to trial, that feels like another assault, because you don't know if the perpetrator is actually getting some satisfaction out of that control or the victim's vulnerability or what have you. This really should not be allowed to happen.
And you're echoing what we hear almost every day. I mean, we're receiving around 3 requests a month now to disclose counselling notes. So we see firsthand the effect that it's having on victims of sexual violence, but also the effect that it has on our therapists. Like counselling notes, they're not used as evidence in other types of trials, like say a physical assault. The law only requires that they are released for trials relating to sexual crimes. So in other trials, the questions that are asked are based on what somebody told the Gardaí, and then based on what they said in court, not what they said to their counsellor. So we, like you, really want to get the law reversed. And thankfully, the government plan on domestic, sexual and gender-based violence provides for the establishment of a working group to review the rationale for the disclosure of counselling notes as part of the court proceedings. And I hope that that's going to be established very soon. But as it stands, victims or alleged victims of sexual crimes in Ireland are allowed at the moment, their counselling notes could be used as evidence in the trial.
What binds you to retain those notes that makes them available, I wonder?
Sorry, I missed the start.
What binds you to, like, is the Rape Crisis Centre obliged to retain these notes?
Absolutely. So it is the law that that we provide them when requested. So we don't take detailed notes, but the notes that we do take can be requested by.
I'm just curious, Rachel, how this works, because the victim or alleged victim doesn't have ownership of them then, so presumably, because I couldn't contact you a week later and say, by the way, I would like you to destroy my notes so they would not be available in the event of a trial. So again, the victim does not actually have ownership of their story, their experience,
Exactly. And we often talk about the empowerment of victims of sexual violence. And this is just one part of the playbook, like I said earlier, which is used, we feel, to discredit victims. And we think that victims of sexual crimes have gone through enough without the pathway to justice being so long, so arduous. And this particular element, it just seems so inhumane that after they've experienced a rape or any type of sexual violence, that those private thoughts, the trauma that this thing has caused them, that they're then allowed to take those notes and to turn them against the person.
Like, I can, just as I say earlier on, I can imagine a person, you know, in working through everything that's gone on with them, that in some way they could say something that could be interpreted by someone else, that in some way they were culpable or lying or something. And that just sounds to me as horrendous. Rachel, so I think, just to clarify, you think there might be some positive moves in removing this legal requirement?
I would love that I could say that I was that it was positive, or that I was optimistic that it will be removed. There is this working group being established. I think it's going to be established in the coming weeks and months. So that will be good, because there will be a discussion around the rationale for the counselling notes. I would dearly love if the law was changed so that it was not a requirement. The fact that it's just for sexual crimes just seems, like I said, really inhumane, and it really needs to be overturned so that victims can really have that opportunity to heal after sexual violence, because counselling is such an important part of that, without the fear that those notes are going to be used in a trial against them.
And Rachel, what would you like to say, maybe to counter perhaps any negative impact this conversation may have had on someone coming forward?
I'd like to say two things. The first is that if you find this conversation difficult, to please call the National Rape Crisis Helpline. That's 1-800-77-88-88. And that's totally anonymous. And you can have a private conversation with one of our counsellors. And the second thing is that if you are considering reporting a crime, why don't you give us a call on that number as well? And we can talk you through the whole justice process so that you can fully understand it and make an informed decision about whether it's something you want to proceed with or not.
But you can fully engage with the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre if you've no a call to the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre is not a adjacent call to the Gardaí. The two things
Absolutely
are separate. You
not.
Move forward from this if you wish with the support of the centre, but you can engage and talk things through with the centre. It does not then mean that you are obliged to go and speak to Gardaí also.
Absolutely not. The conversations that that we have on the helpline, they're totally confidential. And like I said, they're anonymous as well. Okay. There's no traceability. It's a totally sacred space. So please call us. It's fully staffed. People are willing and ready to take a call from anyone around the country at the moment. And the number again is 1-800-77-88-88. And we would love, if you have found this conversation difficult, just pick up the phone and we're here and we're ready to talk to you.
Really appreciate you clarifying that again. Rachel, thanks for your time. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you, you too.
Bye-bye. Rachel Morrow there, CEO of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. Now, Deputy Thomas Pringle has welcomed a motion strengthening measures to combat sexual abuse and the exploitation of children and child sexual abuse material, calling it a global issue that requires a global response. Deputy Pringle is with me right now. Good morning, Thomas. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good. So is this an EU measure, an EU directive? Is it? Talk to us a little bit about it.
Yeah, it was an EU directive that was passed in the Dáil in the last couple of weeks in relation to the global issue of child sexual abuse material and the transmission of that across. And it's basically an EU-wide directive to try and combat that and to try and stop it, basically, I suppose, and to ensure that it's... any complaints are investigated fully in that as well, too. You know, and it's a huge problem. And it is a problem, I think, that, you know, a lot of the websites and stuff like that, the child sexual abuse material, could be coming from anywhere in the world, could be hosted anywhere in the world. And that raises issues then in relation to how they can be policed and how they can actually be shut down if necessary. As well, and you know, we've, over the last number of years, we've all heard stories about the global police action to detect child sexual abuse and the reports that we get into Ireland, like say from coming from the US National Centre for Control. They referred over 10,000 cases to the Gardaí for their discussion last year alone. I mean, that's shocking, the level of material. And it's children are being targeted when they're on the internet as well by some of these criminals, and then, you know, and they've been targeted with solicitation and stuff to get there as well too. And we have to try and do something to try and prevent that and try and stop it as well.
It seems to be a big discrepancy between those individuals that are responsible for this and justice for these children and the protection of the children. It seems that we're going to have to focus on and put the responsibility on those that allow this traffic to happen, because we've seen big groups shut down here, tens of thousands of Irish people involved in the exchange or making of this material. Horrendous, the level of this stuff. And nothing really seems to come of it, such as the scale. So, you know, the tech seems to be able to do absolutely anything when it wants to, except actively stop this happening. Now, the likes of Telegram and whatever, right? They still have tools that they aren't employing to protect children. Clearly, they aren't employing them.
Yeah, and there seems to be just a let them work away from the registration and stuff like that there. And the people who have the responsibility and can control to a certain extent, they should be actually doing more, and meaning us and the department and to target. You know, all these platforms have to be hosted on the website. They can't just go out there themselves. And there is, like you say, like Telegram and other internet providers and stuff like that, and other forms of communication that are facilitating this material as well, too. They say that they're being targeted and they're doing their best to stop it, but I don't know if they really are. And if you look at some of the way some of the algorithms work and stuff like that there, they direct people more and more of this material towards people as well. So there definitely is more than the companies can do, and the whole algorithm thing seems to be something that nobody wants to touch and nobody wants to go near, because the companies, they're making money out of them. And from what, no, I'm no expert on it, but from what I understand as well, some of them don't even know how the algorithms work or don't understand how the algorithms work, but yet they use them to put out this material, and that's something that has to be targeted as well, I think, and that's where it's going to be stopped.
We need to be really careful as well. I think, you know, especially parents with children with TikTok accounts, and if the children are taking part in recent trends and what have you, you know, look at the amount of friends your child have, and just be careful who's favouriting or saving that video as well, because it's not just underground, it's overground as well. You know, what could we do as a nation, firstly? And I think Senator Eileen Flynn worked on this. We need to make sure that we describe these images and videos as they are. Child sexual exploitation material, and not that other phrase that's used. And secondly, every day you read another court case of someone found with, you know, hundreds or thousands of these disgusting videos and images, and they just walk out of court. They just walk out of court. So, I mean, whatever happens at an EU level, whatever happens with big tech and what have you, we need to get our act together in this country. How seriously do we take this problem?
Well, this is the thing, and, you know, as well as you were talking about Eddie Flynn and the legislation that she brought forward in the Shannon to actually change the words that we use into describing this, you know, instead of saying it's child pornography, that it's child sexual abuse material. And interestingly, the department said that they couldn't actually change the wording because it might have an impact on the previous legislation and whether convictions would be sound or that as well. But yet we see that they're implementing this now when it's coming from the EU. And this, I presume that this will have the same effect of that could actually impact on convictions that are taking place here at the minute. So that's something I'm taking up with the department to see if that couldn't have any impact as well. Because if that does have an impact, then we have to seriously address that and we have to find some way to actually deal with that, because we have to make sure that this stops, you know. And the reality is, like, the way that with smartphones and stuff like that there now, and you have to be extremely careful. I mean, I don't think any children should have smartphones, and particularly children, say, under 12 or something like that, they're around the secondary school. And parents need to really seriously think about it, because I know you need to be in contact with your child and stuff like that there, and it's it has changed a wee bit in terms of that. But, you know, smartphones, they can be, then you could be, somebody could be sitting beside you and could be accessing child abuse material.
Look, if we wanted to, and it's easy for me to say, and I think all your kids are over 12, Thomas, it's difficult, you know, it's difficult when all the peers are doing it, so we all have to do it, you know, that sort of a way. I think it's very difficult for us as individual parents to take a stand, but that's a conversation we are going to have into the future. Thanks very much for helping us highlight this. Have a good day.
Thank you, Greg.
Take care, Thomas. And just to this is not a threat to children going forward. This is not something that might happen unless we don't do this, that and then. This is happening right now. And I know I make this point quite a bit, but it's happening right now. Researchers at the University of Edinburgh found 12.5% of our children are estimated to have been subject to online solicitation, such as unwanted sex talk, including sexual act requests in the past year. This, of course, is of extreme concern. And as I say, it's remarkable what, like, say in the PlayStation, you know, if you're in the PlayStation Network, they can flag words, so you can't use certain words. And, you know, certain words we use that aren't offensive here but might be elsewhere, they get flagged straight away and you can get a ban very, very quickly. Abusive language in voice chat, you can get flagged and banned from using the voice chat. The technology is there, but because the money isn't keeping people in that space, they get rid of it. Whereas in other areas, the money is keeping that stuff in that place to keep the traffic and to keep the perverts entertained. And I'm sorry to use crude language, but that's exactly what's going on. And in one area, our children are a positive commodity and they're protected. In the other area, they're actually, it's horrendous. It really is. Okay, let me get to some comments here. Hello, Greg. Regarding Councillor Crossan's comments on the dog warden service in County Donegal, typical public rep hasn't his facts correct. There are two dog wardens covering the county 9 to 5 every day. Malin Head to Bundoran, in that they are dealing with 800 complaints regarding dog control every year and are expected to check that dogs are licensed as well. You can't expect anyone to be on call for every irresponsible dog owner. This councillor should be lobbying for more staff. He never says the current dog warden should be doing more work. Sorry, in case I misheard it. What he said is there should be 24/7 cover. What happens if there is a call after 9 to 5 on a Monday to Tuesday or at the weekends? He never... now, I'm not here to defend Councillor Crossan, but at the same time, I heard what he said. He's saying that there should be more staff for better cover all the time. So that's what I heard from him anyway. There's no legitimate Ukrainian president at the moment. The so-called president cancelled elections ages ago. So why should innocent young Ukrainians go and die for him? And why is the Western media so silent on the matter? Well, there is. They're on a full-scale war. I mean, have you seen the videos of them rounding up men to go and fight? Like, literally dragging them out of cars to go and fight in the front line. There's not a perfectly functioning democracy in Ukraine at the moment. There, as I say, you know, if you're of this... people pretending to be disabled or what have you over there at the moment, you get dragged and sent to service. That's shocking regarding that former employer of an abattoir, stating factories are sending cattle that are marked to be destroyed as unfit for human consumption. I don't know where they are, by the way. I'm not saying they're in Donegal. I don't know where that caller was calling from. But then sending them into the food chain, he needs to go to Gardaí or contact RT Investigates. He says that he has tried very hard to get that information there out there. All dogs should have to wear a muzzle when off the lead, regardless of their breed, says a listener. Hi, Greg. Just wondering about what some of these candidates did for the community before being parachuted in to run. Well, if they did enough, they got elected. If they didn't, they didn't. I think, really. You know, those, even sitting councillors, those that work hard or are seen to work hard were elected. Those who maybe are seen to take the foot off the gas were deselected. So that's up to the electorate. The people listening to this show when across Donegal are not mugs and they will not have the wool pulled over their eyes. That's clear. Good morning, Greg. People are picked on merit, not because they are female or male. Why do we only talk about female representation in big jobs like politics? Let's talk about bricklaying, tidy towns or lifting the bins. It's only high-paying soft jobs these women want. Men work more hours, take less time off. They also work outside and work more dangerous jobs. Look at Ukraine. The women ran away to distant lands with this so-called thing, where they are men, whether they're so-called or not, the cowardly men of Ukraine. There are some jobs that are better suited to other people's needs. Men are underrepresented in lots of in nursing and caring and what have you. Why is that? Would you like to see more equality there? Do you want it across the board? I don't know. 086 60 25,000. All right, let's take a break and we'll be back with the last quarter of the show after these. I'm not sure if you saw the video posted by celebrity chef Gordon Ramsay over the weekend, but he was involved in a cycling incident. And you could see from the video, although he was in his gear, he was still very shaken. He had a really bad cycling accident in the US. And in a video we posted on his social media that I was referencing, he lifted his chef's whites to show substantial purple bruising on his torso, for which he required hospital treatment. And effectively, the message, very, very clear from him, was that everyone should wear a cyclist. Now, Sean McFadden is a cyclist at the highest level, A1 cyclist, one of the highest levels. Good morning to you, Sean. Thanks for joining us.
Morning, Greg. How are you getting on there?
I am good. I suppose you're around far more cyclists than maybe the average Joe. What's your experience of people in crashes? I suppose mostly with helmets, if they're taking that seriously, they're going to have a helmet on. Have you any experience of people's lives being saved because of the helmet?
Of course, Greg. Like, you know, I mean, helmets at this stage of the game is crucial. It's probably the most important part of a cycling kit. You know, I mean, you can go out with everything else on you, but if you don't go with a helmet, you shouldn't be on the road. Like, and we have a rule when we go cycling, like, no helmet, no bike, or no helmet, no cycling. Like, you just, it's saved so many lives, and it's saved so many friends that I know that have crashed with helmets. And, like, if they didn't have the helmet on, like, they wouldn't be here today. Like, so it's like more or less driving the car. If you've no seatbelt on, you shouldn't be in the car. Or, you know, it's part of, and I think it's nearly compulsive now that you have to wear a helmet by law.
No, but you see, that's the problem, unfortunately, because I've checked into this and you are not legally obliged to wear a helmet or indeed high visibility clothing while cycling in Ireland. Now, the Road Safety Authority recommends it, but the fact that you're not obliged to, the high vis did come as a surprise to me, but you don't legally have to wear a helmet. That sends out a
very,
and now they've introduced scooters onto the roads, electric scooters, Sean, and you don't have to wear a helmet on them either. Crazy stuff, isn't it?
I can't imagine. I just can't get that through my head at the moment. I thought it was a couple of years ago that they made it legal, that if you didn't have a helmet, you weren't allowed to cycle.
Didn't get over the line, unfortunately.
No, well, it's unfortunate because, like, it's like I have very good friends in Letterkenny here that crashed many years ago when he was just out on a leisure run, went down to get his water bottle, had a wee stone on the road, like literally going at 20 kilometres an hour, and he took a real bad blow to the head, and only for the helmet, he wouldn't be here today, you know? So to me, it's crucial to have a helmet on.
And cycling is almost unique in terms of transportation in that if you have a crash, it's most likely you're going to come off second best.
Of course, if you, there's no one against a car or against anything. Okay, if you crash on the road, and I've crashed on the road myself, and like, as you know, we had a seriously bad accident in Kilmacrenan many, many years ago, and only the boys that were wearing their helmets, we could have had a massive sad story, but like, they were all wearing helmets, and we got away with it. But you can hit the road, and you can lose a lot of skin, and you can come back from it. But if you hit your head, it doesn't take a lot. And I've seen many of the helmets smashed to pieces. And even today, even when you ride, my friends have ridden the Ross and they've crashed. And even last year, maybe 2 years ago, we've had a few Letterkenny guys riding the Ross. And only they were wearing helmets at that stage. They wouldn't be living today, So it's crucial to wear a helmet. And, you're not going to win the fight against a car or a tractor or something else. There's no way you're going to win the fight. Not a chance. Okay, you might break a few bones, but if you bang your head, yourself, it's over.
Yeah, you see, we're in a dilemma at the moment, and I don't think this conversation has been had enough out loud, in that the government are actively trying to get more people cycling. But
yep.
There are studies that show people are less likely to cycle if they are compelled to wear a helmet. And you just wonder within that juxtaposition there, if that's why we're not having a proper national conversation about this, is because I think they feel, because studies show, that if they do compel people to wear helmets, then the uptake of cycling and scooter using that they want might not happen.
Yeah, well, that's a good point, So, it's a battle that I think will go on and on forever, because, if they do that, then there'd probably be more cyclists on the road, and then maybe they don't want them on the road, so if they keep it the way it is, there's going to be less cyclists on the road. I don't know, It's kind of a battle. It's going to be a battle, forever,
Yeah, indeed. But listen, I listen to people like you, Sean. Like, you're out and about, you're cycling on the roads all the time, you're around an awful lot of people that are cycling. And I'll be honest with you, if an A1 cyclist says to me that wearing a helmet is the difference between life and death, that lands with me a little bit more than the fashion
There's
conversation.
No doubt, Greg. I would not let even my own son, when he's out tapping about around the street or is going anywhere. Yeah. There's a rule in my house, and it should be a rule in everybody's house. And even small kids, when they're going to the park, and I see it myself, young ones on bikes in the park with no helmets on them, it's the most important part of the bike. Is the helmet. So if there's no helmet, there's no bike, and that's the way it is.
Simple.
Because it's so simple. Like, it just takes one bang. That's all it takes. And it's a cheap part of the bike. And okay, helmets now are getting fancier and they're getting more expensive. And but you can still buy a decent helmet probably for 20 or 30 euro. Yeah. There's no doubt about
they
it.
Have
you
little
know
lights
mean?
On the back and front and stuff. And you can sell that.
They
to
do,
the kids, Greg.
They do. So cool. Okay. No, I would.
Sean, thanks for your time. Appreciate it. Take care.
No
Sean
problem.
McFadden.
No problem. Take care.
Bye bye. Now, I spoke to a gentleman here not so long ago, who was actually arguing that cyclists shouldn't have to wear high vis. There are different views out there. 086 60 25,000. Let us know. You can email us as well, and you can send us a letter as well. We got two handwritten letters today. Into us here, Highland Radio Mountaintop Letterkenny. And the first letter reads as follows: to Greg, from a daily listener. Can you ask your listeners, have any of them been asked at medical centres, GP medical centres, to supply for their records, patients' PPS numbers? My understanding is that this number is being asked of people by too many establishments. Is it not the case that an employer and yourself, your employee, should only have this information? Why would doctors need this information? It's none of their business. If patients have to give their doctor and health board their PPS number, then patients should have the GP's PPS number and the staff who work in these establishments' PPS numbers. Please ask your listeners. I'm interested to know others' opinions on this. It is interesting. People can be very defensive of their PPS number. I don't understand that. I'm not saying what's right or what's wrong, but if you want my PPS number, you can have it. Text 086 60 25,000, providing there's a little something in it for me. But maybe it's to keep medical records sound and with the right person. We've often had a case where medical records are sent out to the wrong person with the same name. Is that why you'd want the PPS, to make sure that your information is for you and for you only? Hi, Greg. I was out walking my dog on Friday last and a dog warden pulled up beside me and asked if I had a dog licence. I said no, as it identifies as a cat. Okay, right. Okay, I see. I didn't read that one fully through. I wonder how that worked out for you. Hi, Greg. People found with this material are going to court pleading this and that and getting off with it. It's a shame. They should be locked up. That's the only way to stop them. Never to be trusted. Thanks, Greg. I would imagine that people that have that would, you know, like us as adults, the way I see it is the one meaningful thing we have is the protection and love for children, right? The rest is money, cars, whatever. It doesn't really matter. We raise the next generation and they go on and do the same. Anyone that's capable of exploiting that, I don't think they can be fixed as such. And giving people slaps on the wrists and send them back out into the public is not really, I don't think that's really addressing the underlying problem. Right, listen, that's where we have to leave it on the show today. Thank you for making it such a busy Monday. We'll be back tomorrow from 9.